I'm Megan.
I'm Christy.
And we are
Homebrew Murder Crew.
Remote, of course, if you couldn't tell.
You guys, we are having such issues with all the technology and these platforms for recording and doing remote recording. And if anybody has any insight on what's the best to use for free, we would super appreciate that. So please email us at homebrewmurdercrew@gmail.com.
We're struggling.
So Megan, there was an active shooting situation in Okotoks yesterday.
No way. Yeah. I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, in Sheep River. I don't know all the details, but apparently some like 26 or 28 year old guy shot like a 53 year old man. The Big Rock school was like on lockdown because of it. Like, it wasn't a school shooter or anything. It was just in the vicinity. So they locked down the school and fucking keep that shit in Calgary. I don't want that shit over here.
Hey, you can have that shit.
No,
okay? You can have it.
Quaint
your turn.
Town.
I know. God.
Any other crime news you want to share?
If y'all remember an episode that we... What episode? Oh, shit. What episode was that? The Brittany's last... One of Brittany's last episodes that she did. Yeah. The Winnipeg serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Skibicki.
Yes.
So Jeremy Skibicki's trial started in Winnipeg in connection, like, he's been charged with the murder of Rebecca Contois, Morgan Harris, Mercedes Myron, and the identified woman known as Buffalo Woman.
Right.
His trial started this week, actually. Oh, shit. So we will be following that and giving you updates.
Well, that's crazy.
Also, there was one more thing as well that was in relation to another case that Brittany had brought to us. Oh my God, I am so sorry. I got to go back into our notes here.
It's Tina.
Oh yeah, so the Tina Fontaine, the man that was acquitted in her murder, actually passed away. Earlier in April, at the beginning of April, for unknown cause for that or whatever, but right. He definitely took his fucking secrets to the grave.
Yeah, and they said that because they don't suspect that it was a criminal cause of death, then they aren't going to release any details, but it's still like suspicious or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was interesting anyways.
Yeah, so that's the only true crime news that I have for everybody today that I can think of.
So then I guess we should get right into it then, since
I know.
We don't know how long this recording is going to go for.
Oh, right. Oh, gosh. Okay. We'll get right into it. And you know what? Today, I'm actually not bringing us a crime.
Oh.
I'm bringing us a dark history.
Oh, I love it.
Canada dark history, to be exact. Something I learned a lot about as a child because of where I grew up. But I found that when I moved here at the age of 15, not a whole lot of people actually knew about this event, despite how like massive it was and how important it is to Canadian history.
Okay.
But today I am bringing you guys... the dark history of the Halifax explosion.
Oh, okay.
It is actually dubbed the world's largest man-made accidental explosion.
Oh, shit.
And remains that title today, to this day.
The world's?
The world's.
Holy fuck.
Largest man-made accidental explosion.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I tried to fact check that one and I couldn't find a bigger one.
Yeah.
So I think it still stands.
Okay.
Accidental man-made explosion. So so we will begin. So first of all, I'll just explain to everybody. The Halifax Harbor is actually one of the largest and deepest ice-free natural harbors in the world. The harbor was formed by a drowned glacier valley, which succumbed to sea level rise after glaciation. The harbor also, so the harbor includes a area called the Northwest Arm, an area called the Narrows, which is, it's a constricted passage that leads from the ocean into the Bedford Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And during both the First and Second World Wars, the Bedford Basin played a key role. Given the size of the port of Halifax and its vicinity to Europe, in contrast with other North American ports, the Bedford Basin was used as an assembly point for Atlantic convoys bound for Europe.
Okay.
The harbor was protected by a vast network of fortified gun emplacements, observation posts, and manned by military personnel, which were lined up along the shores of the Narrows into the basin. It also was equipped with torpedo nets that were placed at the entrance of the Narrows and would be risen every morning and then lowered every evening during the so it was raised every morning and lowered every evening to allow traffic to come through just at a specific portion of time.
Okay.
So the Mi'kmaq people called it Jebukduk or Chibukto, meaning Great Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So really quickly, I'll just let you guys know who the Mi'kmaq people were. So the Mi'kmaq are First Nations people of the northeastern woodlands, indigenous to the area of Canada's Atlantic provinces, so primarily Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. So the port of Halifax's role during the First World War made Halifax a very busy wartime port. Tens of thousands of Canadians, British Empire, and American troops passed through on their way to the battlefields in Europe or on their way home from the battlefields in Europe. Millions of tons of supplies also passed through the port, arriving by railway and departing by ship to the battlefields. And the port also operated as a base for the Royal Naval vessels and merchant ships from all over the world needing repair or resupply. On December 3rd, 1917, a Norwegian merchant ship called the Imo arrived in Halifax to undergo a neutral inspection. The Imo was a charter for the Belgian Relief Commission and had the words Belgian Relief in a large block letters painted on the side to protect it from German and Austro-Hungarian submarines. The Imo was sailing in ballast, which means it was empty at the time. So it was traveling empty, so in ballast, to New York to pick up relief supplies to deliver to the German-occupied Belgium. The Imo had spent 2 days in the Bedford Basin in the Halifax Harbor awaiting bunkering, which means refueling, mm-hmm. and was cleared to depart on December 5th, 1917. But it was delayed as the bunkering was not completed in time and the anti-submarines nets had gone up before it was able to depart from the basin. So they spent one more night just docked in the basin.
Okay.
A French munitions ship called the Mont Blanc had arrived in Halifax on the evening of December 5th and taken anchor just outside of the mouth of the Halifax Harbor. As same reason, it couldn't get in at the time because the submarine nets had already been risen. Mm-hmm. And so they were anchored just outside the mouth of the Halifax Harbor, waiting clearance into the Bedford Basin to join a convoy that would escort them across the Atlantic Ocean. The Mont Blanc would not normally have been allowed access into the port, as prior to the war times, when the Halifax port was still under civilian control, munition ships were not granted access into the Bedford Basin.
Okay.
But during war times, as British had taken command of the port, the munition ships was granted a passage into the Bedford Basin. The Mont Blanc's cargo was packed full. The Mont Blanc's cargo included 2,300 tons of picric acid, 200 tons of TNT, 35 tons of high-octane gasoline, and 10 tons of gun cotton.
Oh, no.
Sure, you can get an idea of where this is going. So on the morning of December 6th, 1917, at around roughly 7:30 a.m., the torpedo nets went up and the IMO was cleared to depart from the Bedford Basin. The IMO was piloted by a very experienced local harbor pilot named William Hayes. The IMO began traveling. So IMO began traveling through the Narrows, but because of the fact that they were delayed overnight, they were actually traveling at a speed limit above what the Narrows typically allowed. They were obviously attempting to make up for the time they had lost overnight. So as the IMO approached a tramp steamer traveling the wrong way into the basin, traveling in the wrong direction, so it was going head first towards the IMO. So this forced the IMO to agree to pass on the opposite side. So they ended up moving into the side of the IMO ended up moving to the opposite side into the wrong lane, basically. Yes. So they ended up passing each other starboard to starboard on the right side, where normally they would pass on their left side. The tramp steamer traveling on the incorrect side of the Narrows pushed the IMO east. So this down the pathway of the Narrows, you've got on the east side is Dartmouth, and on the west side was Halifax.
Okay.
So the IMO ended up getting pushed east towards the Dartmouth side, which is the wrong side.
Okay.
Maintaining their rather fast speed, they also encountered an incoming tugboat named Stella Maris.
That's Stella!
Who was traveling... I know, Stella! The Stella Maris was traveling mid-canal, so they were driving down the middle. So this actually forced IMO to go even further east towards the Dartmouth side. So this left IMO in a very, very dangerous position because now they're right in the path of all incoming traffic. At the same time, the IMO was attempting to exit the Bedford Basin. The Mont Blanc was cleared and directed to proceed through the Narrows into the Bedford Basin. Okay. Francis McKay was the pilot was guiding the munition ship along the eastern side, so the Dartmouth side, as he should have. So this was the correct way for him to enter.
Yeah.
And obviously they ended up encountering the IMO traveling directly towards them. Geez. Francis McKay claimed the IMO was moving at an unsafe speed and failed to grant the right of way, as outgoing vessels were to give right of way to incoming vessels. Okay. I'm not sure, obviously, like other people had also been like, they were going really, really fast, the IMO was. But either way, we know that for sure the IMO was on the wrong side. Both the Mont Blanc and the IMO's crews were attempting to alert the other ship to get out of the way. But because of the speed of the IMO, they were approaching each other fairly quickly. With not many options, the Mont Blanc ended up steering hard to the Dartmouth side, so to the eastern side, and crossed its ship bows. When the two ships were almost parallel with each other.
Oh,
The IMO then sent out three signals indicating that it was attempting to reverse her engines. So this slowed down the ship. But the maneuver caused the IMO's head to swing directly into the Mont Blanc.
Uh-oh.
So at 8:45 a.m., Mont Blanc and the IMO had collided. IMO struck the starboard bow of the Mont Blanc, causing minimal damage to the hull. The two ships were briefly stuck together, so the IMO engaged its engines to pull away from the Mont Blanc. If they hadn't done this, everything probably would have been okay.
Really?
But engaging the engines caused sparks, yeah. And this ignited the grains of dry picric acid stored below the deck of the Mont Blanc. The damage at this point to both ships was actually relatively minimal, but the crews of the Mont Blanc quickly abandoned ship, knowing very well what the ship's cargo was.
Right.
The crew was all French speaking, but they were attempting, without much success, to alert the people around them of the dangers.
I was going to ask, like, did the IMO know what kind of cargo this boat was carrying?
They did not. So it's 1917. They actually had like no idea. And because of the rules changing because of the war, like it's not typical for a munition ship to be traveling that way. So it's possible that they would have had absolutely no clue that that was even a possibility. Yeah. So the crews of the Mont Blanc had abandoned the ship. They were rowing desperately towards the Dartmouth shore. A fire started at the water line and quickly traveled up the side of Mont Blanc, burning the drums of benzol stored in the ship's deck. This caused large plumes of black smoke into the sky. Mont Blanc was propelled towards the Halifax shore. Because of the direction in which the IMO hit them, the IMO coasted towards Dartmouth, and the Mont Blanc started coasting towards the Halifax side. So when the French crew of the Mont Blanc abandoned ship, they rowed desperately to the Dartmouth side, away from the where their ghost ship was now traveling.
Right. And I just want to make a quick little comment. Wonder if this is why we have Wemyss symbols on these trucks and, you know, these vessels. That's that carry all this like point. Really dangerous, hazardous material.
I know. Jeez, yeah. So the Mont Blanc was propelled towards the Halifax shore by the impact. And the fact that this is now an unmanned ship, this caused the burning ship to glide directly towards Halifax Pier 6. Pier 6 is a busy area filled with residential homes, businesses, moored ships, and the Royal Naval College of Canada.
Oh, my God.
Also a very large sugar refinery.
Oh, no.
A large crowd of spectators had begun to form on both the Halifax and Dartmouth shores to gawk at the burning
ship.
Get
the fuck out of there.
Unfortunately, only a very small handful of harbor and naval officials knew about the cargo on the Mont Blanc. The Mont Blanc continued to burn for the next 20 minutes. During which, at a nearby railway, a busy hub for freight and passenger railway that were coming in and going out of Halifax. This is like the main port that they would go through. A chief clerk, William Lovett, was alerted to the cargo on the burning ship. William called an agent further up the line, a dispatcher named Patrick Vincent Coleman, to inform him of what was happening just like right outside their windows. Yeah. Patrick Vincent Coleman was about to flee when he realized that there was a train due to arrive at 8:55. This was a passenger train from St. John, New Brunswick, with about 300 passengers aboard. He stayed at his post and tapped out a message on his telegraph keys. Warning the stations up the down the line to stop all trains. The message that he had sent was, quote, hold up the train. Ammunition ship a fire in harbor making for Pier 6 and will explode. Guess this will be my last message. Goodbye, boys.
Oh, my God.
At 9.04 a.m., Mont Blanc exploded.
Oh, I just got so sad. And I just got chill up my spine about that. Holy.
I know. It's, ugh. That was, like, one of the stories that I'd heard the most when like, people would retell, yeah. like, what happened. So the explosion was a blinding white blast that sent out a shockwave at more than 1,000 meters. So that's 3,300 feet per second.
Oh my God.
At a temperature of 5,000 degrees Celsius.
Fuck.
Pressure of 1,000 atmospheres accompanied the moment of detonation at the center of the explosion.
Holy fuck, that's fucking insane.
It is insane. White hot shards of iron rained down on both Halifax and Dartmouth. The Mont Blanc's forward 9mm gun landed approximately 5.6 kilometers north of the explosion site in the Dartmouth.
Holy.
With its barrel bent, and it was half torn away by the force of the blast. The shank of the Mont Blanc's anchor, weighing half a ton, landed 3.2 kilometers south in the Halifax side.
Jesus.
A cloud of smoke rose at least 3,600 meters. That's 11,800 feet. The blast was felt as far away as Cape Breton, which is 207 kilometers, or that's 129 miles away from Halifax, and Prince Edward Island, which is 180 kilometers, 110
oh
miles
God.
Away from Halifax. An area of about 1.6 kilometers, so 400 acres, was completely leveled by
Jesus
the explosion.
Jesus Christ.
The harbor floor was momentarily exposed by the volume of, was momentarily exposed.
Oh my God.
By the volume of water that was displaced from the impact of the explosion, a tsunami was formed by the water surging back in to fill that void.
Oh my God.
The tsunami rose as high as 18 meters, so 60 feet above the high water mark on the Halifax side of the harbor.
And imagine, like, how fast this is all happening too. Like
faster than you can even imagine. It's terrifying. The IMO was pushed onto the shores of Dartmouth by the tsunami. All but one of its crew members was killed by the initial blast.
Oh, man.
21 of the 26 men on the Stella Maris, which was the ship that was driving mid-canal that pushed the IMO further to the wrong direction, had actually turned around when the Mont Blanc started burning to try and assist.
Oh,
the tugboat ended up on the Dartmouth shores with devastating damage. All but one of the crew members of the Mont Blanc survived. Knowing of what was to come, they fled in time and chose the right side of the harbor to flee to. This ultimately saved their lives. On the shores of Halifax, over 1,600 people were killed instantly.
Oh my God.
By the impact of the explosion. 9,000 people were injured. More than 300 of those 9,000 injured later died from their injuries. Every building within a 2.6 kilometer radius, that's over 12,000 buildings in total, were destroyed or damaged beyond repair.
This is so, like, I'm sorry, all I keep saying is, oh my God, and gasping, but, like, this
I
is
know, it's
so unreally, like, unrealistically devastating.
It's I know, and, like, insane. Nobody talks about
no.
it. Hundreds of people who had been watching the fire from their windows, from their homes, were blinded by when the blast wave shattered the windows
oh
in front
God.
Of them. On the north end of Halifax, in a neighborhood formerly known as Richmond, an entire city block burned from overturned stoves and lamps that had, like, fallen over from the impact
yeah.
of the blast. Large brick and stone factories near Port Six, including the Acadia Sugar Refinery, were reduced to heaps of rubble, killing most of the workers.
Oh,
the Nova Scotia cotton mill, located 1.5 kilometers from the blast, was destroyed by fire and collapsed. The Royal Naval College of Canada building was badly damaged, and several cadets and instructors were injured. The Richmond Railway Yard and station were destroyed, killing 55 railway workers, including Patrick Vincent Coleman
oh.
and William Lovett.
Oh, man.
The North Street Station, one of the busiest in Canada, was badly damaged. The North Street Station was where the passenger train that was expected 8:55 was traveling to. The message Patrick Vincent Coleman had chose to send in his final moments was received, and the passenger train set to arrive was stopped just before
oh
the
God.
Explosion occurred. The train was halted at a Rockingham station on the western shores of the Bedford Basin, approximately 6.4 kilometers from the downtown terminal. Firefighter Billy Wells, who was the driver of Canada's first motorized pump truck,
oh.
along with five other firefighters, had raced to Pier 6 while the ship was still ablaze, on the pumper truck called Patricia. It was faster than any of Halifax's other fire wagons, which consisted of horse-drawn fire wagons with buckets on them. When the crew arrived, the heat from the Mont Blanc was so intense they couldn't even look at it. Billy and the crew of the Patricia were meters from the burning ship, hooking up hose lines when it exploded. Billy was thrown away from the drive. He was sitting in the driver's seat. He was thrown out of the driver's seat of the truck by the explosion and landed away from the truck with part of the steering wheel still clutched in his hands.
Oh, my God.
The impact had torn the clothes off of Billy's body. He had suffered burns and had a chunk taken out of his arm, but he survived.
Wow.
The tsunami waters had carried him even further away until he'd become entangled in a telephone wire and almost drowned. He would later say of this event, quote, "It blew the toes all off me,
oh my God.
But it wasn't so badly hurt. Only it took a hunk of me arm. That's all," Wells said. Well continued, "I guess there wasn't room in hell for me," unquote.
Oh, damn.
Billy Wells would eventually be able to walk among the devastation and described what he saw, like when he finally got himself untangled.
Yeah.
And he would say, quote, "The sight was awful, with people hanging out of windows dead, some with their heads missing and some thrown onto overhead telegraph wire," unquote.
Oh my God, that is awful.
Yeah. Billy Wells was the only member of the fire engine Patricia to survive.
Oh.
After the explosion, Coleman's message, followed by other message later sent by the railway officials who survived, were received by the rest of Canada. The railway quickly mobilized aid, sending dozens of relief trains with fire and medical help from towns in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick on the day of the disaster, followed 2 days later by help from other parts of Canada and from the United States, most notably Boston. Vincent Coleman is actually subject of a Heritage Minutes as well.
Oh.
And was a prominent character in the CBC miniseries Shattered City, The Halifax Explosion. Coleman's telegraph keys, watch, and a pen are on display in the Halifax Explosion exhibit at the Halifax Maritime Museum of the Atlantic to this day. There are numerous plaques, markers, pieces of embedded explosion wreckage, and gravestones scattered throughout Halifax that commemorate the disaster, including a piece of the Mont Blanc's anchor. A monument was placed where the anchor had landed on that day in 1917 and remains there to this day.
Wow.
A series of housing blocks was built in the once devastated North End using hydrostone bricks to provide shelter for homeless victims. The neighborhood, now named the Hydrostone, its former name Richmond, is now mostly forgotten. Next door to the Hydrostones is Fort Needham Park, a grassy hill topped with a concrete memorial where every year on the 6th of December, people gather above the Narrows to hear the ringing of the memorial carillon bells to remember the victims of the disaster. A smaller memorial to the explosion also sits at Halifax Fairview Cemetery. The graves of those who had died are scattered in Fairview and other cemeteries across the city. Many pieces of debris from the exploded ship can be found all over Canada in museums.
Wow.
Perhaps the most poignant reminder of the tragedy and the response to it is the large Christmas tree that is cut every year from the Nova Scotia woods and erected in central Boston, a gift of thanks from the people of Halifax to a city that provided essential relief and support in the wake of the explosion.
Aww.
That is something that they continue to do to this day. And this could have been a microbrew.
It's all good. Hey, So the way that guy, I'm sorry, I forget his name. The way that he described it when he's like, I guess there wasn't enough
Billy Wells.
Hell for me. Yeah. And he's like, to see like the carnage and people hanging dead out of their windows and severed heads. And like, you know, like imagine having to clean up after that, you know, like.
Right.
Oh,
it's brutal. I remember when I lived in Nova Scotia, there was like when you go to Halifax, to downtown Halifax, there is actual pieces from the ship still like embedded in the concrete where it landed in 1917. Oh, it's still sitting there today.
That's wild. And just like, the floor, the ocean floor, the basin floor is like exposed at one point. It's like, of course it was. But like to hear it described like that is just absolutely, I there's no words to describe that and how that makes me feel.
I actually found an article in the newspaper. It was actually from a couple years ago where a family had a tree cut down in their front yard, and when the tree landed, when it landed on the ground, there was actually pieces of the Mont Blanc embedded in the tree trunk that had been there since 1917.
Oh my god.
Like it landed and they're looking at it and they were like, what is that sticking out of the tree? And it was in fact pieces of the ship.
Wow. That was wild.
And nobody talks about it.
Yeah. I haven't heard of this.
Like it's crazy. I know, and it's wild. It was so devastating, especially like for such a such a busy area.
Yeah.
During the First World War. And I mean they bounced back as most places do, but I appreciate so much that to this day they never forgot the support that they received from not only other parts of Canada, but Boston in particular.
Yeah.
So the tree that is always in Boston's city center every year at Christmas time comes from Halifax.
That's crazy.
It's a tradition that they've done ever since 1917.
Wow. I'm glad they still do that.
It's crazy, but I know I'll post I'll post pictures on the socials and everything, obviously. I'll also try to find a link to that Heritage Minutes. I also did, like, a lot of people, obviously, because you know what? Nothing can just be what it is anymore on the world of the internet. Yeah. People are obviously doubting that Vincent Coleman, like, his message actually stopped the train. Right. People are saying that it had been stopped for another reason. What a coincidence. Mm-hmm. But, and obviously, like, something that I forgot to research and I probably should have, that I'm thinking about now, was that even being from Nova Scotia and living there and learning about it in my schools, as, like, you know, in the province in which this happened, mm-hmm. there was never really any mention of how this impacted the Indigenous communities mm. of Halifax. But I did find an article that stated that an entire, like tribe had been wiped out.
Oh, boy. Oh, my God.
From the impact of the explosion. Yeah. I haven't been able to fact check that, but right. Obviously that's something I probably should have done a little bit more research on, but it's just not really readily available.
Yeah. I just can't get over, like I said it before and I'll say it again, it's just like you telling us what happened and how it plays slow motion as you're telling it, but then realizing yeah. how in an instant this all just happened, right? Like, I mean, once things yeah. like, yeah, of course the fire started first, but once that heats up hot enough and the explosion starts, you know, like, it's just instantaneously, like, people are gone, people are dead, tsunamis, you know, shards of shrapnel and everything everywhere, like, just yeah. wild.
Yeah. When you think about it, the IMO departed the basin at 7:30 a.m. The two ships collided at 8:45, mm-hmm. and by 9:04, the ship had exploded. Yeah. And in that time, like, it seems like such a short period of time, but also in real time, so many people, because they didn't understand mm-hmm. the dangers, they just flooded to the shore to just watch. Stand and yeah. gawk and watch the ship burn. And all those people ended up losing yeah. their lives. Like, there was children that were on their way to school. Ugh. There was, like, you know, all the workers, all the travelers from around the yeah. world, like, nobody, because of the, you know, the, like, all communication was done through telegraphs yeah. back in that day. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have radios, really. Like, we didn't have the same amount of, like, technology that we did now.
You couldn't text somebody be like, GTFO, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh.
So only a small handful of people, like, you know, the guy that spoke to the captain of the Mont Blanc yeah. and, like, whoever approved it to enter it into the basin or whatever were, like, really the only ones that yeah. knew about what the cargo was. Yeah. And that was the other thing too that was mentioned, is that when the British took over and changed that rule, which then allowed the munition ships into the base, I'm not trying to blame anybody, mm-hmm. but, you know, like, that's not something that normally would have been allowed. Right. No special precautions were put into place. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, per se, like, maybe if it's traveling through, other vehicles are to be halted right. on the other side. Like, who yeah. knows? But just the whole, and, like, all the events that happened up to that moment with the tugboat that was traveling down the wrong side, pushing the IMO
yeah.
further into the wrong direction. And then the other steamboat going down the mid canal, pushing it even further to the wrong side. Right. Like, a lot of, like, and them speeding, obviously, yeah. were all
a lot of factors.
Contributed
yeah.
to the event.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so happened that in those, like, I guess, lack of judgment moments,
yeah.
the ship that happened to be the next one coming up the canal
yeah.
was just filled with all that tons of explosion.
Yeah. It's like everybody in the moment is, like, cutting corners and thinking that the next person will be able to, like, overcompensate for their need to cut corners, but yeah. everybody's thinking that, so nobody's actually being safe, you know, in that moment. But
exactly.
Wow, that was a good one, Megan.
And it's like, Yeah. And you think about it now, like it's so easy for us to be like, well, like, you know, so many of these steps could have been taken to prevent it, but we're also forgetting that it's 1917. We didn't have the same technologies and stuff like that. And again, like it's like I'm just gonna bring this up because, you know, here in Canada and I'm sure the rest of the world, people are always in such a fucking rush to get
Always.
places. So they're constantly speeding, and that's how accidents happen. And that's part of that's what that was a contributing factor into this event as well, is that the IMO was delayed. So they were speeding down this narrow canal, which I will post pictures of. It literally is like this small little canal that goes into this big giant basin. And in this big basin, all the ships are docked and they're all just hanging out, having a good time. And then when you go down the narrows back towards the Atlantic Ocean, it opens up. It's, you know, the harbor and then into the ocean. Like it's just wild. Like, and I mean, I've lived there. It's a beautiful place. If you ever get a chance to go, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you take the time to visit the
Oh, yeah,
museums,
I for sure would.
specifically the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic. It's beautiful. I've been there many, many times. Along with pieces of, you know, the wreckage from the Halifax explosion, there's pieces of the lots and lots of pieces of the Titanic there as well,
Oh,
because of where that incident happened. It was kind of in a gray area, so it did kind of happen in Halifax, like in, like, you know, there. So we got a lot of the pieces from it. But
Great.
anyways, I digress. It's it's I highly recommend that, like, you read a little bit more up on this event as well. Like it's so big,
Also,
so big. And it,
I forgot about heritage moments or heritage minutes, and I miss those.
yes, I know those are great, eh? I love the heritage moment. I remember the one, I can picture it in my head so clearly, the one about Vincent Coleman and his little tap, 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 tap. Well, sorry, I'm not making fun of him, but like his, tapping out his
I think
message,
I
and it's
remember that
so
too.
dramatic. And they're like, oh, the ship's gonna explode. And it's just, you know, it's great. So, I mean, a lot of those have been a little bit debunked, like as not quite accurate today. But you know what? I'm too old to really like feed into that shit
Still a
now.
part
I'm
of our
happy to like.
heritage.
Yeah, remember things as they
Yeah,
were,
exactly. Well, thank you
or
for,
as it was then.
yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Megan, for bringing us that. That is definitely a deep, dark part of our history for sure.
It sure is. And like, I just can't, like, my oldest stepdaughter actually right now told me that they're learning about Nova Scotia in grade 4. And like it hasn't come up.
Might be a little dark for grade four.
I guess, but like I don't recall, like everybody that I've met here in Western Canada, like I mentioned it to them, like never heard of it. I'm like, dude, and in like an entire like city was leveled by this massive explosion. Like we all know the other explosions, like Chernobyl, like all those disasters, but this one is our history, and it's mostly forgotten in Canada, I guess. But
Truth.
maybe we can bring it
Let's
back.
bring it back, Megan.
Do your research.
We're doing
I'm
it.
bringing it back.
Well,
We need to
and I
remember.
look forward to seeing some photos on social media that you're gonna post,
Oh yeah.
which I guess you all can follow us on our socials.
Yeah. So you can find us on Facebook at Homebrew Murder
We're
Crew.
on Instagram at Homebrew Murder Crew.
You can follow us, and I please suggest you do on the Tiki Talks at Homebrew Murder Crew.
Yes, if you follow us on TikTok and we get to 1,000 followers, we can go live, which will help solve our video crisis here. So try
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And you can,
Yes, please follow us on TikTok.
and you can email us at homebrewmurdercrew@gmail.com if there's a case that you would like us to cover, if there's a piece of dark history that you're really interested in that you'd like us to deep dive, you know, all the things, personal stories,
Like
et
the
cetera.
paranormal
Yeah,
too.
absolutely. But until next time, we appreciate you listening to us.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you. Well, you'll hear from us again very soon.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye.